This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 13th of September 2024. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And introducing Steve Clark.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now, excuse me, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Barracks housing plan splits opinion. Have your say on new estate. And open day attracts scores of visitors. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
And it's Barracks housing plan splits opinion. A state of up to 1,000 homes could be built. A new master plan to turn an army barracks in Winchester into housing has been presented to the public. Sir John Moore Barracks, to be vacated by the military in 2026, will be transformed under the new scheme into a residential estate of between 750 and 1,000 houses. The Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, has now revealed its plans to the community in a series of drop-in events releasing blueprints of its proposal. The master plan proposes 40% affordable housing, walking and cycling links, a heritage trail, retaining mature woodland, and up to 1.9 hectares of sports playing fields. At two events last week at Littleton Memorial Hall and Week Community Centre, DIO representatives explained the blueprints to those who came along. This is the third stage of public consultation following events last November and December and a series of open workshops between December and May. There was also a guided tour for 100 people who signed up to walk the space and experience the scale of the site. Considering its location 2 miles out of the city centre, one of the main issues surrounding the new complex is transport. Several members of the public, all anonymous, have commented using the interactive online map provided by the DIO. Many comments are concerned about the park and ride. One said, "This park and ride seems way too small. Given the Barton Farm one isn't going ahead now, there is a real need for a large park and ride north of the city to be able to limit the volume of traffic down Andover Road, Winchester Avenue." Others express concern about turning natural areas into housing. Another comment read, "I don't like the use of this area of nature-rich oasis being used for housing, given there are many acres of depleted arable land on the other side of Andover Road." Some were positive. One wrote, "It is great you are reusing buildings. There is so much embodied carbon in construction that to knock it down is wastefulness that we cannot afford." Others were keen to see plans for a sports complex. One wrote, "Ideally, a company like David Lloyd could develop the existing site, but even just allowing access to Winchester residents to another pool would ease pressure on current facilities." Robert Smith, head of major disposals of the DIO Estates Division within the MOD, previously said, "It is important to us that we create a proposal that balances the various constraints and opportunities on site to deliver an exciting new neighbourhood and community for Winchester that celebrates the legacy of the site while promoting sustainability and biodiversity." Feedback from the consultation will be reviewed before a master plan is presented to Winchester City Council's Cabinet for consideration, before a final stage of public consultation prior to the submission of an outline planning application. The DIO intends to submit the application to Winchester City Council in the spring of next year to have it approved by summer. It then plans to start work in winter 2026 or 2027, with the first houses delivered not before 2027.
Have your say on new estate. Another new housing estate may be built next to a Winchester suburb if emerging plans are approved. The plans for 195 houses to be built in a field by Lanham Lane near Wick are still evolving, according to the potential developers Kier Group. The site is close to the proposed location for the huge new housing complex proposal for Sir John Moore Barracks, which will have between 750 and 1,000 homes if it is approved. On the official Lanham Lane public consultation website, Kier Group says the housing layout will reflect the current housing mix policy, which includes a larger proportion of smaller 1, 2, and 3 bedroom properties. The provision of smaller, often narrower house types results in a higher density, despite in visual terms the spacing between the buildings being like a development of larger houses. Winchester and the surrounding villages are seeing a rise in the number of planning applications as the Labour government's policy to boost house building comes into force. Recently, Wanston Parish Council held a drop-in event in Sutton Scotney to discuss alternatives to developers Waite's plans to build 120 new houses in that village, which it says would overburden the sewage system. According to the Kier Group, one of the advantages of the Lanham Lane site is its low flood risk. They say the site is located entirely within flood zone 1, where there is a low probability of flooding from rivers and the sea, and there are no established sources of flood risk. Given the geological composition of the site, there is a low residual risk of groundwater flooding. There is no known evidence which demonstrates the site to possess a history of groundwater flooding, and the site's raised elevation also makes this unlikely. Developers are encouraging residents to submit opinions via their website before September the 30th. More information can be found at, all one word, Lanham, L-A-N-H-A-M, lanhamlaneconsultation.co.uk. Remember, that's all one word, lanhamlaneconsultation.co.uk.
Open day attracts scores of visitors. Rain did not stop play at the Hampshire Chronicle's annual open day, with scores of people taking up the invite for a look around the newsroom, including a man who lived in the building for 18 years. The event, held on Friday, September the 6th, as part of Winchester's Heritage Open Days programme, saw scores of readers and history enthusiasts stop off at the newspaper's city centre office for a tour, chat, and look around its newsroom. The Hampshire Chronicle, one of the country's oldest newspapers, is produced by a team of journalists who work at its Grade 2 listed building in Upper Brook Street. The newspaper is owned by NewsQuest, one of the largest publishers of local newspapers in the country, which is in turn owned by Gannett. The Winchester building has been part of newspaper operations, formerly the base of sister title, the Daily Echo, for many decades, as one visitor knew only too well. Giles Vodica grew up living in the building, as his dad, Joe Vodica, was the news editor. He saw the open day advertised last year after it had happened and was gutted to have missed his chance to see his old home. However, he waited for this year's Heritage Open Days event to roll around and was delighted to see the Hampshire Chronicle taking part once again. Giles, who is now 55 and lives in Badger Farm, said, "I remember what is now the conference room was the reporter's room, and it used to be full of smoke. You couldn't even see your hand some days." Giles' father, Joe, was one of the best-known Fleet Street veterans working on newspapers for five decades. He died, aged 82, in 2005. He spent the last years of his working life on the Southern Evening Echo, running the Winchester office until his retirement in 1988, and lived on the two floors above it with his family. Giles said, "Being a newsman, he was right on top of everything until the last minute. I can remember being in New York with him and him buying a paper to read about Gannett buying the newspaper group." Giles' childhood bedroom on the third floor is now office space for NewsQuest's digital advertising company, Local IQ, which is shared with Winchester Talking Newspaper, a charity that reads and records audio versions of the newspaper every Friday, distributing memory sticks to more than 80 blind and partially sighted people across the city. The Talking Newspaper also welcomed visits to their open day, proudly showcasing their work. Chairman John Richards said, "It was a wonderful day. We had about 30 people visiting, and we have picked up four or five new volunteers and even some new listeners." The Winchester Heritage Open Days Annual Festival is now in its ninth year and has seen hundreds of events. Take September 6th to the 15th, 2024, with the optional theme of Roots, Networks and Connections. Go to Winchester Heritage Open Days, that's all one word, .org for a full list of events.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Baisley Kathleen, known as June, passed away peacefully at Mountbatten, Hampshire, on the 1st of September 2024, aged 90 years. Geary Harwood, Sharon. Sharon passed away peacefully on Monday the 2nd of September, aged 54, surrounded by her loved ones. Gaynart, Michael Edward, Mike, died suddenly and unexpectedly, but peacefully, on the 25th of August 2024. Griffin, Dave, 89, died the 2nd of September 2024. Marsden, Richard Guy Knott, died peacefully on the 27th of August 2024 in Andover Nursing Home. Minette, Marion Louise, died peacefully on the 16th of August, aged 96 years. Oakley, Elizabeth, known as Betty, passed away peacefully on the 7th of September, 2024. Randall, Frederick John, Fred, died on the 21st of August, 2024, passed away peacefully in the loving care of his family and wonderful staff at the Shawford Springs Care Home. Sanders, Susan Harriet, passed away on the 17th of August 2024, aged 91 years. Smith, Margaret, née Thatcher, known as Peggy, of Ozzelbury, died peacefully on the 21st of August 2024. Wood, Andrew Neal, known as Woody, died suddenly on the 6th of August. Wrigley, Peter Michael, passed away peacefully at home in Alsford on the 4th of May 2020, aged 77 years. Christian comment has been written by Nigel Hemmings this week. The title is Milestone for Vineyard Church. Thank you, Daphne.
God builds the church. Last week at Winchester Vineyard, we celebrated the church's 30th anniversary. It was September 1994 when Hugh and Ginny Cryer, having retired from the Navy, sensed a call to move back to Hampshire to start a brand new church. Planted out from Southwest London Vineyard, where they had served for over 6 years, they bought a house in Chesil Street. Within a couple of months, they were joined by two or three families and a crowd of students, and the first small group began in earnest. Hugh and Ginny's relaxed approach to church, genuine love for people, and openness to the presence and power of the Holy Spirit quickly attracted others who were exploring faith or in need of a place to belong. In a recent interview for the 30th birthday, Hugh remarked, "We focused on welcoming and stewarding the presence of God, knowing that people without God wouldn't make a very good church, but that if God was in the church, people would surely come." Having said that, Hugh and Ginny welcomed those who would not normally feel they belonged in a church. One of their favourite expressions, still much quoted today, was, "This is the church of the second chance, and the third, and the fourth." One small group quickly became two, and then three, and after a year they began meeting fortnightly on Sunday evenings in the Stanmore pub. By 1996, morning meetings had begun, first in the Badger Farm Community Centre, and then in the Lecture Theatre at King Alfred's College. In 2000, the fledgling church gave and borrowed enough money to buy a dilapidated old warehouse on the Bar End estate, miraculously got planning permission against the odds, and worked tirelessly to convert it into a church for the new millennium. To prepare for this celebration, we captured current church members' stories of how God had moved in their lives while being at Winchester Vineyard. As well as displaying them around the building, we made a video to share some of the key moments. We heard stories of kids and youth work, compassion and healing ministry, churches planted, charities started, and people sent out far and wide, and we prayed for all that God is doing now in each of these key areas of church life. We gave thanks for the countless people who have served over the past 30 years. Joe and I arrived in 2011 to take over the reins as Hugh and Ginny retired, and we have learned an incredible amount leading this generous, welcoming and worshipping community over the past 13 years. Looking back, one thing is very clear to me, that establishing and developing Winchester Vineyard was a far greater thing than any human or even group of talented humans could have achieved. This, in fact, was a work of God. We, his disciples, are his body, his hands and feet, sharing his love and power with the world. But as Psalm 127 clearly states, it is very much God who builds his house. To see the full story of 30 years, head over to the Winchester Vineyard YouTube channel. And that comes from Nigel Hemming, who is senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church.
Lovely. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Time for Revolt, please?
Yes, indeed. This first one is from Kevin De Cruz. Like everyone else, I am appalled by the way the new Labour government has behaved towards pensioners. The state pension is barely the minimum wage, and they had the audacity to cut the winter fuel payments. How about cutting back on the number of MPs and those crony lords and their subsidised House of Commons restaurants and bars? And their £93,000 salaries plus expenses. That would pay our pensioners their rightly deserved winter fuel payments. I'd like to see Labour MPs living on £12,000 per year. Pensioners in Spain get a monthly pension of £3,000 after 40 years' service, plus free healthcare. And we are richer than them. We need a revolution in this country, and I think it is starting. And that one's from Kevin De Cruz, former independent parliamentary candidate for Winchester, Pine Road Bishops Waltham.
And on the same subject comes this letter from E. Wright, headlined Age Concerns. Chris O'Neill's letter, Chronicle, September the 5th, comments on the impressive victory of the Labour Party at the recent general election. The government's overwhelming majority was achieved with the support of just 20% of registered electors and 33% of voters. Each Labour MP was elected with less than half the number of votes required to elect either a Conservative or a Lib Dem MP. Impressive? No. Extraordinary? Yes. All due to the vagaries of our electoral system, and all the more remarkable when the victory was secured by Labour keeping stumm about their policies during the election campaign. Now we know why. Mr. Neil goes on to deplore the new government's treatment of pensioners and suggests a return to a philosophy by taxing according to ability to pay. In 2023-24, the top 1% of earners paid 29% of all income tax. The top 10% paid 60%. Ability to pay is a policy of tax the risk, tax the rich and risk takers till the pips squeak. The abolition of the winter fuel allowance may save £1.4 billion. On the other hand, if all pensioners who are eligible for pension credit claim it, then there won't be any saving at all. It is reminiscent of the 1997 Labour government, when one of Chancellor Gordon Brown's first decisions was to increase the pension by 75 pence per week, enough for a loaf of bread. As a pensioner living alone, I will lose £300, having already lost £169 for my TV licence. Now it is reported that Chancellor Reeves is considering abolishing the single person's council tax discount, which in my case is £517. Together with further council tax increases and two forecast energy price rises this winter, which the new government categorically said during the election campaign that they would not allow, the figures continue to grow. And there's more to come. This is just the beginning. The words of Sir Winston Churchill are apposite. The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of blessings. The inherent virtue of socialism is the equal sharing of his miseries. And that's from E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Chandler's Ford.
And Roger Stevens writes, Vote for Holmes. Mr. Gaster, Chronicle Letters, August 29, states that under pressure from the government, building new homes to relieve the housing shortage, quotes, has clearly got to happen, end quotes. Alas, this will not happen. It is illegal for building companies to relieve the shortage because prices would fall, profits would fall, so the directors would not be acting in their shareholders' best interests. Local authorities and housing associations cannot afford to relieve the pressure because under right to buy, any houses they build must be sold at a fraction of the building cost to the lucky tenant. At the last count, there were about 1 million sites where planning permission has been granted, but no start on building has taken place. Politicians mouthing about breaking down planning constraints is no more than a device to allow their chums to build mansions in the green belt. The fact is that a housing shortage is built into the system and will remain so until those afflicted by it stop bleating and form themselves into a political pressure group and actually go and vote when they have the opportunity. The country is run for the benefit of old people because old people vote. If 80% of young people turned out to vote, politics in this country would change so swiftly and so dramatically that it would take your breath away. But young people can't be bothered to vote, so they don't care. So why should we silver tops care about them? And that's from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
The next letter follows on from one of our headline pieces, and it's from Lawrence Jones saying, "Have your say." With the attention on John Moore Barracks, it may have escaped the notice of interested parties that there is an outline planning application being considered for up to 195 dwellings on the land to the west of Lanham Lane and south of Dean Lane. Currently, this area is grassland. Amongst the issues involved with this significant development is the inadequacy of the adjoining lanes of Lanham Lane, Salters Lane and Dean Lane, which are already severely stretched in coping with existing modest traffic and for the most part a single lane. There is a consultation website at, you've heard it before, www.lanhamlaneconsultation.co.uk. And that one is from Lawrence Jones, Dean Lane, Winchester.
Simon Lever urges us to save the fields. Once again, there is a serious risk of greenfield land being destroyed for the sake of multiple housing. This time, potentially 1,000 houses. Yet another local area is threatened to become dense housing, creating a serious risk to ever-decreasing natural land. The candidacy to become a site important for nature conservation must be accelerated before it is destroyed for the sake of housing. Accompanying infrastructure problems are a serious issue. Around 2,000 residents, at least 1,000 vehicles, more schools will be needed, as will another surgery. Countryside around Winchester is cherished by all. As I have stated a number of times, once developed, it can never be returned to a natural landscape. Animal and bird species would suffer dramatically. Time to protect northern fields and other locations under threat. And that comes from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And the next one is from Alex Oliver, headed Reality Check. Joanna Lewis writes, Chronicle Letters, September the 5th, that it is time for a reality check. After deciding to channel George Orwell regarding decisions on town planning. Whilst Orwell wrote about the dangers of authoritarianism, I very much doubt he had the building of much-needed homes in mind. Winchester is indeed in need of more homes. The average price of a home in the city and the changing demographics from people born and raised here to wealthier people from places like London reflect this. The country has failed to build enough homes for decades, and subsequently we are experiencing an affordable homes crisis. I pity the young and those without inherited wealth. The two ex-military sites in question are not areas of green belt. Winchester does not have a green belt, as Joanna Lewis incorrectly suggests. However, Winchester is abundant in green space, lots of it. We need to build more homes in the areas we can, like these, which are not part of the National Park or our wonderful rolling Hampshire Downs. Time for a reality check, indeed. And that's from Alex Oliver, Elizabeth Place, Full Flood, Winchester.
John Murray writes about women blazing a trail in cricket. And this letter is about an accompanying photograph, which shows two smiling ladies dressed in cricketing gear. White blouses, white trousers, pads, and both of them carrying bats, and being looked on by two small boys with some curiosity. And the photo apparently was taken in 1948. So John writes, in your edition of September the 5th, on page 25, there is a photo entitled Your Picture. The photo was taken around 1948 at Crawley, near Winchester. The lady on the left is my mother, Kath Murray, and the other lady, I think, was Betty Packard. I did have a copy of this photo, but gave it to Crawley Parish Council, and they, I believe, have put it into the pavilion at the George Philippi Recreation Ground. The photo I had only showed one small boy, that being one on the left, which is me. I was about four at the time, so you are wrong. I am now in my 80s. Mother said I always spoilt a good picture and wanted to be noticed. I have no idea who the other lad is. This was quite groundbreaking at the time, ladies playing cricket. They were the opening batters for the Crawley side. Who their opponents were, I do not remember. Father played for Crawley, batting at number three, and was a slow bowler. My parents were married in 1940, and they moved to the Red House in Crawley when Father, Ron Murray, started to work for Douglas Seligman at New Barn Farm. My brother, Keith, and I lived in Crawley with our parents until around 1960, when Douglas Seligman downsized his farm from around 3,000 acres to 1,000. And Father then went to work for Scats, and we moved to Dean Lane in Winchester. Quite a shock to see one's younger self staring out from the pages of the Hampshire Chronicle. And that was from John Murray, Burley Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And continuing the sporting theme, Mike Sherwood is a non-league fan. I recently went to two matches in the Wessex Football League, one at Andover New Street and one at Alresford. On each occasion, I arrived 10 minutes before kick-off, paid £4 and £3 respectively to get in, pensioner rates, and watched entertaining games in peaceful surroundings. Contrast this with the overblown, overhyped Premier League with its ridiculous prices. It's non-league every time for me. And that's Mike Sherwood, right close, South Wanston.
And the next letter comes from Sarah Pollard Dambash, and it's headed Incredible Work. This open letter is being sent to all neurosurgeons who have an interest in pineal cysts and tumours, or the incredible work of Professor Charlie Teo. I need you to take a chance on me, because this one act of kindness could not only change my life, but the lives of many more after me as well. I have a 24-year-old calcified cystic tumour of the pineal gland, which is now causing intermittent obstruction to the aqueduct and causing CFS build-up and hypertension. I feel the gush through my temples and it almost knocks me out. It struck me with a host of horrific symptoms, from loss of sight, poor balance, crippling migraines, tinnitus, TN type 2, facial paralysis, functional neurological disorder, tics, tremors and seizures. I also have light sensitivity and noise sensitivity, as well as absence seizures and at times fainting. I use a wheelchair and stick outside the house and stick when walking about due to my instability. On seeing me, Charlie Teo was wonderful. He was informative, let me record and video due to my memory issues, and then offered me the one thing I needed so desperately, a chance to regain back my life. For the record, Professor Teo has offered to perform the life-changing surgery I need at no charge if I am able to find a UK neurosurgeon to invite him to perform the surgery with temporary clinical privileges here in the UK. Of course, his business class travel and accommodation would need to be covered, which we are fundraising for. If we cannot bring him to the UK, then we need to raise £50,000, as Madrid is the closest we can get to, and I can't fly in my current state. If we can get him to the UK, we plan to use any additional funding to create a charity for pineal patients to access under Sarah's Hope, because we are a small minority group of individuals who go under the NHS radar unless our tumours are malignant from the start. Sadly, many sufferers like me go through years of misdiagnosis and second and third opinions before having to seek surgery abroad. I would love to change this and help us put patients in touch with the doctors we really need. We often spend a lifetime not being believed or told our results are incidental when they are actually life-impacting. Once I get my surgery, please keep an eye on Sarah's Hope, for my hope is that I will be able to help put in place the change we need. Follow Sarah's Hope on Facebook for updates or go to gofund.me/C3A9A6E8. And that's from Sarah Pollard-Dambach, Swanmore, and her email is sarah.dambach@outlook.com.
A Paul Norton living in Australia asks, can you help? I am interested to know if anyone may have any information about the history of The Peaceful Home, 9 East Street, Alsford. The reason is that my grandfather, who I never knew, possibly spent his last days in The Peaceful Home in then Alsford, Hampshire, although this may not be the same property. I only know this form of partially deciphered letter to my mother. I wondered if you know if this was originally a nursing home, hospice or hospital in the 1930s. If you have any additional information, it would be very helpful in finishing one outstanding query on our family tree. I am in Australia, but have a brother and cousin in England who could contact you. And there's an email address to go with this one, which is thenorts, that's T-H-E-N-O-R-T-S, thenorts@bigpond.com. And that's from Paul Norton, Pine Tree Drive, Lake Macdonald, Queensland, 4563, Australia.
Mrs. Pamela Peterson writes to record her thanks to NHS. Recently, I was taken severely ill in the night and was visited by a doctor at 5 a.m. who ordered an ambulance, and I then spent 3 days in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, A&E and Clifton wards. The care I received throughout from doctors, nurses and other helpers was superb. How lucky we are to have an NHS whose staff are so skillful, kind and caring. And that's from Mrs. Pamela Peterson, Edgar Road, Winchester.
And the next letter is headed Dark Lady and comes from Duncan Eves. Unravelling a mystery. This coming Saturday, September the 14th, Richard Westwood Brooks, who is an authority on the composer Sir Edward Elgar and who regularly gives presentations at the National Trust property in Worcestershire, which was Elgar's birthplace, will present a talk in Winchester entitled The Violin Concerto, Who is the Dark Lady? A mysterious Spanish quotation at the top of Elgar's violin concerto seems to hint at an unknown female who is the inspiration of the work. Mr. Westwood Brooks will examine this mystery and will no doubt provide his own conclusions as to the identity of this woman. Always controversial and always entertaining, Mr. Westwood Brooks is guaranteed to provide an afternoon of stimulating thought. The talk begins at 2 p.m. in St. Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street and will last about 90 minutes. Admission is free, with donations welcome, hosted by the Southern Branch of the Elgar Society. And that comes from Duncan Eves, Goring Field, Winchester.
Thank you all. And if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with editorial comment, first person, and Belle Garum. The editor heads up her article this week with "Our City Looks Set to Expand." Steve. Thank you.
Developers have their eyes on the North Winchester for new homes, as made clear in today's Hampshire Chronicle. We have two stories which show that the countryside near Wick and Littleton will be transformed in the next few years if planning proposals become a reality. Plans for Sir John Moore Barracks, when the military vacate in 2026, have been in the works for some time, but now developers have revealed their master plan for the site. Hundreds of homes, sports and youth facilities, and a new park and ride are on the table, and residents are divided. Under the draft proposals, there will be a capacity for 850 vehicles, which is a similar number of spaces to the South Winchester Park and Ride. This guarantees, hopefully, a reliable bus service to the new estate. But will this be enough space for the residents, visitors and commuters? Surely some drivers who use the current provisions would prefer to use the park and ride in the north. If hundreds of new houses on the barracks weren't enough, plans are emerging to turn the fields by Lanham Lane into nearly 200 homes. Developers are promising to include green space, but is it enough? Of course, none of this has come as a surprise after the Labour government told local authorities that many more houses need to be built, increasing Winchester's yearly total from 666 to 1,099. The homes need to be built somewhere, and it looks like the north of the city will soon be expanded to meet that quota.
Now, Khalid Aziz writes about "lay off the smokers" in first person this week. That's controversial, Daphne.
Indeed. Right, he says, "I abhor smoking. As a child, I was bathed in smoke. My parents smoked incessantly. They had ashtrays by their bed. In the morning, a cigarette often came before a restorative cup of tea. As we watched television, we did it as a family then, as like most, we had only one telly, wreaths of blue smoke insidiously enveloped us children. I attribute to my smoke-filled early life a weakness of chest, which can still on occasion trigger mild but nonetheless debilitating asthma attacks, thankfully now only a few times a year. As I set off on my journalistic career, most newsroom colleagues would light up regularly. Smoking and alcohol went together. Every BBC premises had a so-called BBC club, a euphemism for staff bar. One editor I worked under would sink several pints at lunchtime and then bring up half a dozen more to down in the stressful run-up to our 6 o'clock new programme while chain-smoking endless cigarettes. Surrounded as I was by such role models, naturally I had to try tobacco, if only to fit in. I hated cigarettes. I just didn't like the taste. Thankfully, I dallied with a pipe for a while. As a craven teenager, I thought it looked cool. I loved the theatre of opening a tin of Balkan Sobrani, rubbing the tobacco to release its seductive aroma, stuffing it into the pipe and tamping it down, then lighting up with a Swan Vesta. Like coffee, it smelled better than it tasted. I believed it would make me more attractive to the opposite sex. I'm not sure it did. Anyway, I didn't have the nerve to canvass female opinion. What I soon found out was that a pipe played havoc with my clothes. Pinhole burns appeared in shirts and trousers. The pipe had to go. From then on, my smoking was merely passive. I say merely. Many was the time that after a newsroom shift, when we repaired to the pub for an inevitable pint or three, I found my eyes watering. Lord knows what the smoke was doing to my lungs. Thankfully, I haven't suffered like the late great Roy Castle, who, having never smoked, is thought to have contracted lung cancer from passive smoking in the nightclubs where he played his trumpet. A nice man taken far too early. My father was very keen on his hookah or hubble bubble pipe. He thought it safer, as the smoke was cooled and filtered as it bubbled through the water in the base of the pipe. Sadly, it didn't work that well. He died of a heart attack at 46. No doubt his arteries had narrowed prematurely. My mother, despite being on 60 fags a day, lasted until 79, but the last 10 years of her life were marred by debilitating COPD. When the smoking ban was brought in 2007, I welcomed it. Overnight, pubs became a joy to be in. Of course, one felt sorry for the smokers, banished to the freezing cold to indulge their guilty pleasure, but pleased they weren't imposing their habit on others. Walking around London, the wind swirling around office skyscrapers would stir up eddies of fag-ends in the spots where smokers gathered for a ciggy break, much to the chagrin of their colleagues who had to cover for them during the 20 minutes it took for them to descend from their high-rise office, get their hit of nicotine, and then return to their desks. So you think I would be in favour of the latest moves to restrict even more where smokers can light up? I am not. Smoking is dying out naturally anyway. Travel abroad and you can see how far Britain has come on its smoke-free journey. Smokers are now a minority, and our country proudly protects minorities. Lay off the smokers.
Thank you. Now, Bel Garum usually looks at Winchester life from an alternative angle, and this week is no different. We've got a couple of pieces. What have you got, Nick?
Well, the first piece is entitled Marwell's New Baby Giraffe. Marwell Zoo's giraffe house recently witnessed the birth of a perpetually endangered Rothschild giraffe calf. Ruby, the giraffe mother, went into labour on August the 21st and delivered a healthy male calf. This marks the first growth in the zoo's giraffe population since 2012, coincidentally the same year Ruby was born. Remarkably, the newborn is a miracle baby. as Ruby was on contraception. Due to early life struggles, the giraffe enclosure was closed to ensure the survival of both mother and calf. Despite initial hiccups, including an infection that required antibiotic treatment, the zoo reports optimistic signs about the baby giraffe's health. Elise Summerfield Smith, zoo veterinarian, said, "Ruby had a normal labour and the calf arrived after just under 4 hours of labour. Ruby is a first-time mum, and just like all first-time mums, she was a little nervous at first. However, with peace and quiet and plenty of help and support from the hoof stock and veterinary teams, she has settled into her role. Ruby's calf found it a little bit tricky working out where the milk came from in the beginning, but after some care from the support teams, he seems to have cracked it now." And needless to say, there's a picture to go with that of the head of a young giraffe. And it looks like a giraffe. The second piece in Belgarum this week is entitled "The Ghost Bridges on the Weirs." Only one remains. One pedestrian crossing over the River Itchen along the Weirs, the riverside path between the High Street and Wharf Hill. An Ordnance Survey map from 1895 shows 3 footways across the watercourse. Now, only the bridge at the garden of Georgian Kingsland House in Chesil Street remains. The only signs of the other two are the hole in the wall that held the metal beams on one and the concrete island created to support the structure. Belgarum presumes the bridge has got too expensive to maintain or to insure. At one point in the recent past, there was a proposal by St John's Winchester Charity for a redevelopment for housing for the elderly next to the Chesil Theatre around a decade ago. A footbridge was proposed as part of that scheme that would have given the residents a shorter route into the city centre and avoided the unpleasantly busy traffic-clogged Chesil Street. Alas, it never came to pass, and people were denied the pleasure of walking over the pellucid waters of the famous chalk stream. And there's a photograph accompanying that piece as well of a wooden door in an ancient wall. It's not quite clear which of the entrances to the footbridges that one was from, but it's a typically Winchester historic view.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. On Monday the 16th of September, we've got Winchester on Film. This is at 6 p.m. It's a screening of archive footage of Winchester, and it's at the Hampshire Records office in Sussex Street. Tickets are £7.50 for that. On Tuesday the 17th of September, we've got Macbeth at 7 p.m. at the Winchester Theatre Royal. Tickets are available. That's also on Wednesday the 18th as well. Tickets are available through the Theatre Royal box office. On Thursday the 19th of September, there's coffee at Rick Stein's. There's a coffee morning, 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. Coffee and cake in aid of the Children's Society. That's £5 per person at Rick Stein's on the High Street in Winchester. A bit of music for you on Saturday the 21st of September. Holst, The Planets. So we were talking about Holst earlier. Mm. And that's 7:30 at Romsey Abbey. The Charity Symphony Orchestra will be celebrating the 150th birth anniversary of the composer. And So what else have we got? Oh, there's more music on Friday the 27th of September. The Tippett String Quartet are playing a concert at 7:30 at St. Peter's Church, High Street, Stockbridge. Tickets are £20 for that, and tickets are available from admin at stockbridgemusic, all one word, .uk. And The Lion and the Unicorn. On Wednesday the 2nd of October, there is a radio play being performed live on stage. It's starring Brian Capron from Coronation Street, Fraser Hines from, well, I remember him from Doctor Who, Corinne Wicks from Doctors in Emmerdale, Tim Hudson from Father Brown, and that's at the Theatre Royal Winchester at 2:30 p.m. So that's, yes, that's Wednesday the 2nd of October. Now, we've been, the Chronicle has started a new column. It's called On This Day. I'm thinking it's probably Thursday the 12th, but there are a number of interesting facts. 1818, Richard Gatling, the American inventor of the Gatling gun, was born in North Carolina. The birthdays on this day included Patrick Moore, the actor, Mariah Aitken, the actress, and another actress, Rachel Ward, Darren Campbell, the former athlete, Jennifer Hudson, the singer, and Emmy Rossum, the actress. And in history, in 1440, Eton College was founded by Henry VI for 25 poor and needy scholars. And prefects were warned to look out for ill-kempt heads, unwashed faces, and foul clothes. Gosh. In 1878, Cleopatra's Needle, an ancient Egyptian obelisk, 68 foot of granite, was presented to Britain by the ruler of Egypt and Sudan and erected on the side of the Thames. In 1970, Concorde landed at Heathrow Airport for the first time to a barrage of complaints about noise. And in 1978, the Queen Mother was appointed Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports. It was the first appointment of a woman in more than eight centuries. We'd love to know what you think about on this day and whether you would like to hear it again. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 14th of September, the sun will set at 7:20 p.m. And on Wednesday the 18th of September, the sun will rise at 6:46 a.m. and will set at 7:11 p.m.
Should be September.
And now on to items of general news. Steve, would you like to kick us off, please?
Thank you. Winchester School of Art applies to revamp office block. A planning application has been submitted to turn a defunct office block into a new hub for Winchester School of Art. The University of Southampton, which runs the school, has applied to Winchester City Council to modify the currently empty Capitol House on Andover Road near the railway station. The prospective changes to the building include to its facade, the replacement of the current entrance and access ramp, and the removal of a roof turret. In March, the University of Southampton applied for a change of use of Capitol House in Andover Road. The four-storey mid-1990s building of 2,550 square metres would be the first School of Art building away from its main campus, around half a mile away on Park Avenue. Until recently, Capitol House was used as civic back office space for Hampshire County Council, but has been vacant for a prolonged period. It was used as the temporary base for Winchester Library when the building in Drury Street was being converted into the Discovery Centre in the 2000s. In a letter published with the application in March, the university's agent said, "Our client is excited about the opportunity of bringing forward a beneficial use for the future of Capitol House, by creating a new teaching space for Winchester School of Art in a prominent location. It is deemed that the site is suitable for use by the school as a centre for creative technologies for the university by virtue of the existing layout and floor space arrangement. The building is proposed to be used solely for academic teaching space and will not include any dedicated social facilities. There is an opportunity to give Capital House its own distinct identity in this area and secure a foothold for the University of Southampton in Winchester, whilst maintaining close links to its core campus. The proposed use of the site will positively contribute to the local economy through the active use of the site as an educational facility. Bringing life back to this key site will have positive knock-on effects on local businesses through students benefiting from local amenities and commercial offerings.
Vet save dog that swallowed fish hook. A dog that swallowed a fish hook has been saved at a Hampshire veterinary clinic. A calm walk for Millie the dog with her owners on a riverbank turned into a dramatic dash to Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists in Winchester when the Labrador raided a fisherman's bag. The six-year-old family pet was hoping for a treat, but instead swallowed a fish hook complete with line and weights. Local vets took x-rays, which confirmed Millie had swallowed the potentially deadly angling kit, and she was swiftly referred to Linnaeus-owned Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists in Winchester. Owner Claire Rowe from Goring, Berkshire, said it all happened so fast, and she soon realised something was seriously wrong with her pet. She said, "We were walking along the river when Millie suddenly stuck her head into a Tesco carrier bag belonging to a fisherman. As soon as I saw what she was doing, I called her. She came to me, and it was at that point I examined her and noticed a tiny piece of metal in the corner of her mouth, while Millie immediately started brushing her nose with her paw. I had the strong impression it was a fish hook, but Millie wriggled free. When I did manage to get a second look, I couldn't see anything, so I was worried she'd swallowed it. I called to the fisherman to ask if there were fish hooks in the carrier bag, and he confirmed there were. I went straight home and spoke to my daughter Charlotte, who coincidentally is a vet and currently working in Sydney, Australia, but back on a visit. I told her I thought Millie had swallowed a fish hook and line, and she said I needed to take her for an x-ray as soon as possible, which I did. Sure enough, Millie was referred to award-winning animal hospital, Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists in Winchester, to have the fish hook safely removed. Claire continued, "The concern was whether they could retrieve the hook non-surgically with an endoscope, that's a mini video camera with tools for internal procedures, or whether she would need to be cut open. Thankfully, they managed to safely remove it with the endoscope, and Millie recovered very quickly from the procedure. When I went to collect her the following day, she was bouncing around and full of energy. She couldn't wait to go out and have a good run. The vet said it was lovely to see a dog bouncing out of the hospital looking so well, so soon after treatment. And that's accompanied by a picture of Millie the Labrador sitting looking rather thoughtful. She's probably thinking about that Tesco bag."
MP calls for action to raise awareness of drug shortage. The Liberal Democrat MP for Winchester has called for action to tackle drug shortages and more investment in pharmacies after a visit to Winchester High Street Pharmacy. Danny Chambers visited the Wellbeing Pharmacy this week to meet staff and discuss the problems facing the sector. Pharmacies have seen a sharp increase in the number of drug shortages in recent years. A 2024 report by Community Pharmacies UK found that 79% of pharmacy workers believe patient health is being put at risk by medicine shortages. In addition, 99% of pharmacies are are experiencing shortages weekly, and medicine shortages are adding to the workload of GPs. Medicine shortages are contributing to the financial difficulties already faced by pharmacies because of increased costs and insufficient reimbursement due to the government contract. 3/4 of pharmacies are experiencing financial loss, and an average of 7 are closing each week. Mr. Chambers said that it is extremely concerning that Winchester patients are facing medicine shortages, and has called on the government to provide more support to fix the devastating legacy of the last government.
Live facial recognition technology to fight crime. A live facial recognition technology is being used for the first time in Winchester to help identify and apprehend criminals. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary is piloting the use of the technology as part of an ongoing operation targeting individuals wanted on warrants, those evading court proceedings, and high-risk missing persons. The technology will be deployed in vans at specific locations in Portsmouth, Southampton, Basingstoke and Winchester over 3 days. The vans will be in Winchester on Thursday, September the 12th. The areas where it is being used will be clearly marked with signage, and officers will be on hand to speak to members of the public and answer any questions. The technology for the operation is being provided by South Wales Police as part of a mutual aid programme. Images of people the police would like to speak to are added to a watch list that is unique to the operation. The technology creates a biometric facial template from faces seen in the live video footage of crowds passing a camera, and compares it against the biometric template of images in the list. The biometric template of any image from the live video footage that does not cause an alert is automatically and immediately deleted. Watchlist images and their biometric templates are deleted within 24 hours after each day of the deployment.
Online group of artists put work on show in real life. A painting group born during lockdown held an exhibition as part of Hampshire Open Studios event, showcasing dozens of artworks. Members of Strange Times Quest, an amateur group that usually meets online, convened to admire each other's work at St Mary's Chapel in Kingsworthy at one of their tri-yearly shows. On Friday, August the 23rd, an array of paintings was hung around the room, with their creators milling around admiring each other's efforts, many of which were for sale. But the gathering, also attended by Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire Professor Joy Carter and Mayor of Winchester Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, wasn't just a pleasant hobnob. It was also a competition, with the trained eye of local professional painter Emma Lowers called upon to judge the best painting. Emma said, "The overall quality was really high. There was so much to choose from. My final selection was often the very first piece where I thought, oh, I like that one." That piece was Clive Weaver's Autumn in the Mountains, which was used on the poster for the event. The group began at the start of the pandemic with just 6 members, but soon grew to 30 due to its popularity with painters from around the country. On the evening of the exhibition, there were visitors from Cornwall and Yorkshire. Now, because of the ever-swelling number of new applicants, the group has had to be capped at 50 people, with a waiting list for those still hoping to join. One thing several members said was that the group helped people stay in touch during lockdown. Member Jenny Leveridge, 74, said, "It started as just a group of friends. It happened to be the first weekend of lockdown, but they decided to continue online, and from then it began." She added, "I hadn't done art since I left school until I joined 2 years ago." Coordinator Paul Young agrees that the community aspect is central to the group. He said, it's a great way for people to get together and keep in touch. The Mayor of Winchester spoke glowingly about the exhibition. Councillor Gordon Smith said, I think it's a fantastic idea. Look around the room. There's a range of skills, but you can see the enthusiasm coming through. Schools do so much damage telling people they can't do things. You just have to be trained how to do it.
Railway timetable changes on London Line. South Western Railway is changing its timetable for some routes in Hampshire for the autumn season. Due to falling leaves, the rails can become slippery, meaning some trains must depart earlier to allow for slightly longer journey times. SWR has confirmed there will be minor changes to the service linking Basingstoke and London Waterloo from Sunday, September the 22nd, as well as a number of other services in and around the county. In a statement on their website, SWR said, "We operate an autumn timetable in response to leaf fall season. This is when wet leaves fall on the rails and are then crushed to a slippery pulp, meaning trains need more time to safely accelerate and brake. Some first trains of the day will also depart earlier than normal. For example, the 4:54 a.m. service from Basingstoke to Woking will depart at the earlier time of 4:51 a.m.
Almost 25% of libraries shut since 2016. More than a quarter of libraries in Hampshire have closed their doors in the past 8 years, new data shows. The information from the BBC's Shared Data Unit shows that there were a total of 53 operating libraries across the country in 2019, with 5 community-run libraries and 48 council-run libraries. However, that number has dropped to a total of 40 libraries across Hampshire in 2023, all of which are run by Hampshire County Council, with no community-run libraries still open. The data showed that 11 of the closed libraries have stopped being statutory libraries, having moved to community organisations, with 3 libraries having closed their doors permanently. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, in July 2020, Hampshire County Council approved a plan, following an extensive public consultation, to create a more efficient and affordable library service. This was due to the need to make savings following reductions in national government funding. As a result, 8 public libraries were closed and funding was withdrawn from 4 community-run libraries. 11 of these sites were subsequently supported by the County Council to transition to independent community facilities run by local volunteers.
Strong support for Village's Big Show. Despite the wet weather, dozens of people came out to attend the Littleton and Harestock Show, taking place at Littleton Recreation Ground on Saturday, September the 7th. The event had a range of attractions, including arena events, field stalls, competitions and more. There were also traditional village show activities, including a coconut shy and an information tent where people could learn more about the development plans for the Sir John Moore Barracks. This is the first year the show has been chaired by Lisa Fielding. She said, "The weather hasn't been that great for us. A week before we were panicking, but it looks like people have come out for us, which is really great. It's good to see the community enjoying itself and raising money for our beneficiaries. I want to thank everyone who's helped us. We rely heavily on volunteers who help on the stalls, who help on the gates, people who do the raffle. It's a big community thing. It's done by the community for the community." Nicole Blaxland was at the show as a vendor selling crocheted items. She said, "I have been to the show before with my family growing up. This is my first time here as a vendor. It's been great so far." Jill Connors of Wild Things Design was selling prints at the show. She said, "I have had a great feeling about today. It's been very busy. I think people were going to come out no matter what the weather. I've never been to the show as an attendee, but I have exhibited here before. They do a lot of traditional village show things here, and I'm looking forward to seeing it all." This year, the Littleton Show raised money for Littleton Junior Football Club, Winchester Bereavement Support, and Winchester Hospice.
Care home residents enjoy a day at the seaside. Residents from Flowerdown Care Home took to the sea for an enjoyable day out. The Winchester facility's resident activities coordinator, Kate Harfield, was the brains behind the fun-filled seaside cruise. Wet Wheels, a charity that provides sea experiences for people with disabilities, helped organise the special event. Setting off from Gunwharf Quays, the residents cruised along the Solent, taking in the sights of the busy ferry route. The trip was followed by a picnic lunch provided by the home's hospitality team and a tasty ice cream treat. Claudia Noons, general manager of Flowerdown Care Home, said, "Our residents had a whale of a time on the cruise. Adventures that take place outside of the home are a regular event for the residents, and we always ask for ideas on where they would best like to go. Thank you to Wet Wheels, who helped make the day possible, and a lot of fun. Our residents were able to enjoy a beautiful day on the river, which was quite therapeutic, and the weather made it all the more special." Flowerdown Care Home, part of Barchester Healthcare, provides residential and nursing care for up to 42 residents, from respite care to long-term stays. And that piece is accompanied by a lovely photograph of 8 members of that trip sat on the quayside down there at Gunwharf, all smiling and looking very happy in the sunshine.
New bakery set to open in the city centre. A new independent bakery will open its doors in Winchester city centre next month. The Cornish Bakery will be holding a grand opening on Monday, the October the 21st. The bakery is taking over the unit previously occupied by fashion shop Phase 8. The new bakery will create 20 year-round local jobs, with plans to create a charity partnership with a local cause to be selected by the staff. Work is currently underway to get the site ready to open next month. Alongside seating for 86 people at a time, the Cornish Bakery will contain a private party room for approximately 8 people, which can be booked in advance by groups of friends, families, or colleagues for meetings, celebrations, and functions. This is a completely new concept for Cornish Bakery, and the first of this kind for the company. The open plan kitchen will enable visitors to watch the team baking, and the original brickwork and timber flooring will be sanded, varnished, and restored.
Winchester Heritage Festival gets underway. Perhaps Winchester's biggest festival, launched with a reception in a suitably apt venue, Heritage Open Days, or HODS, got underway at Old Hyde House in Hyde Street, built with the stones from nearby Hyde Abbey, the last resting place of King Alfred the Great. This year we'll see 190 free events across Hampshire, with many in and around Winchester. The new chair is Liz King, who is replacing Nikki Gottlieb, who has been pivotal in growing the event in recent years. Miss King paid tribute to Mrs. Gottlieb and presented her with a bouquet of flowers. She said, "When she first got involved, there were only a handful of events in Winchester. In 2016, Nikki decided Winchester could do better and grow it to 40. In 2018, the festival peaked pre-COVID at 140 events. This year there are 250 events across Hampshire. We are one of the largest Heritage Open Day hubs in England. There are ambitious plans, a full history festival with the university, with lectures, workshops and study days, starting in 2025, and a History of the High Street project. The reception was organised by the Trustees of Hampshire History Trust, a charity formed to run the annual Hods Festival. With heritage funding getting scarcer, Miss King thanked the festival's sponsors, as well as the city and county councils. Highlights of the Open Days event so far have seen an Anglo-Saxon event at the Ark, Regency dancers at the Great Hall, the Hospital of St Cross Open Day, plus much more. The Hampshire Chronicle Office, a Grade 2 listed building, also held an open day on Friday, September the 6th, with goodie bags for the first 50 people through the door. There are still many more events to come this weekend, such as Winchester College Tours, Hyde 900, King Alfred Trail, Saxon Activities Table, and Hidden in Hyde Trail, a Friends of King Alfred Bus Grand Display, and the Quakers Open Gate event at their meeting house in Colebrook Street. And that's accompanied by a picture of the front door of the Hampshire Chronicle with Nikki Gottlieb standing there with staff from the Chronicle, Kim Barber as well there, with beautiful hanging baskets either side of the door, all smiling and looking very happy.
Charities hit. A pair of charity shops in the centre of Winchester had been burgled. The incidents happened at two Oxfam charity shops, one on High Street and one in Parchment Street, at some time between 6 p.m. on Sunday, September the 8th, and 8 a.m. on Monday, September the 9th. A gold brooch, £800 in cash, vintage coins, around 10 smartphones and an iPad were stolen during the burglaries. Police have launched an investigation into the burglaries and are appealing to members of the public for more information. Officers would also like to speak to anyone who was in the area who may have a dash cam fitted to their vehicle or anyone who may have been offered any of the stolen items for sale. Anyone with information should contact police online or by calling 101.
Girls' cricket team's historic match at Lord's. The cricketers of Hursley Park will be walking out at Lord's on Saturday for the first time in 32 years. The men reached two national village finals in the latter part of the 20th century, but it is the girls that take centre stage on this occasion, as they have reached the national final of the ECB Vitality Under-13s competition. Victories over Broadstone, New Milton, a game in which Venn Baker took 5-2, and Odiham and Greywell in the earlier rounds of the competition, led to a long trip to St Just in Cornwall for the quarter-final. A 35-ball half-century from Viola Elvey set up a 32-run victory and a semi-final contest with Surrey-based club Spencer. In the semi-final, an unbroken century partnership between Sophie Butcher, 73, and Martha Appleby Ingram, 34, took Hursley to a total of 141 for 2 from 20 overs, and Butcher then played a key part with the ball, 3 for 30, and with a direct hit run out from the last ball of the match, meaning the scores ended tied. But the girls in green were through to the home of cricket by virtue of losing fewer wickets. Saturday's opponents in the final are Whitmore Cricket Club from Staffordshire, and the match commences at 10:30. This is a nine-a-side competition, and Hursley will be selecting from the following 10-strong squad. Sophie Butcher, captain, Martha Appleby Ingram, Ven Barker, Maddie Battistich, Harneet Chahal, Viola Elvey, Isabel Peters, Millie Peters, Imogen Wilson, Alice Wingrove. And that story is accompanied by a picture of the Hursley girls' team looking resplendent in green after their historic match at Lord's.
New hen dog teddy bear art found on railway bridge. A new piece of art by the artist known as Winchester's Banksy has been discovered. Hen dog, an anonymous graffiti artist, has painted a teddy bear with wings on a railway bridge in the Winchester area. The picture was first discovered on Saturday, September the 7th, in one of the Watercress Way's unused railway tunnels. In a post on Instagram showcasing the latest piece, Hendog said that the title of the piece is Chapter 9, The Fallen Bear. This is not the first time that Hendog has painted pictures featuring bears. In August 2022, the artist completed a piece in Guildford titled Lost Bear, Volume 1, depicting a girl dropping the bear. Since then, the bear has been seen in multiple works across Hampshire, becoming homeless, getting into trouble with the police, and becoming reliant on alcohol. This is not the first Hendog mural to appear in the Winchester area this year. As previously reported, a mural of a girl playing with a daisy chain was seen in Bishop's Waltham in February. And that's accompanied by a picture of the bear. It's rather high up, so it's not easy to work out, but I think I've got it. The bear's on its back, falling down with its arms up, and the wings are also straight up as well. It looks as if it's falling with some speed, and Hendog has put his name alongside it.
Family Fun and Run Day at Farm Project. The Boaz Project will host its annual Family Fun and Run Day later this month. Everyone is invited to join the fun and games at Hill Farm near Barton Stacey on Saturday, September the 28th between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. People are welcome to bring their dogs for a scenic stroll around the farm, with a reminder that all dogs must be kept on leads. For those keen to make new furry friends, there will be a gentle walk with Boaz donkeys beginning at 11 a.m. Organisers promise live music from the Riverside Concert Band, and for those who like to dance like nobody is watching, there will be a silent disco for all ages. Hot food will be served from 12 noon, plus ice creams and homemade cakes. For runners, there will be a chance to take part in 5K or 10K cross-country races, complete with prizes for the best fancy dress. Runners of all abilities are welcome. Bibs can be collected from 12 noon. The run starts at 1 p.m. Every penny raised will help support the work of Boaz, an inclusive farm-based charity set up to provide a brighter future for adults with learning disabilities. Boaz manager Stuart Palmer said, "We're excited to host the Family Fun and Run Day here at Boaz. Our 5K and 10K trail offer local runners the opportunity to explore beautiful private farmland. So why not bring the whole family along and have some lunch, take a stroll with donkeys, or cut some shapes in the dance floor in our silent disco? We're looking forward to welcoming both new and old friends." And that's also accompanied by a picture from last year's event, where there are a number of people having lots of fun, by the looks of it, astride inflatable chickens, as far as the photo works.
Mud, music and fun at festival favourites. After 3 days of mud, music and dancing, Mucky Weekender 2024 has come to an end. This year has seen the biggest Mucky Weekender since the festival began, with around 5,000 tickets sold. While the 2023 event was held in scorching heat, this year's attendees faced wet and rainy conditions, However, the weather did not put a dampener on the attendees' enthusiasm for the festival. Ragnar Hammerbane told the Chronicle, "This is by far the best festival for people who love music. It's full of DJs and music lovers. Despite the weather, the crowd came ready to hear a great amount of bass." Diane and Rich Barlow had travelled from Brighton to attend Mucky Weekender this year. They said, "This is our favourite festival. It has an older clientele and people are more respectful. It is for a more mature crowd. There isn't any litter and there hasn't been any trouble." Baz Smith from Exeter said that he also enjoyed the event. He said, "I think it's been a great weekend. The weather wasn't good at the start, but it has improved. There has been so much good music. It's been amazing. I'm just loving it." Jane Nichols has come from Southampton. She said, "The layout and the vibe has been great."
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have time for you for this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers. Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Steve Clark.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns. Thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.